Would you want to know if you carried the gene for Alzheimer's or breast cancer, diabetes, or even male pattern baldness? Or better yet, how sensitive your body was going to be to certain medications? Well, nowadays, you can. That's right. Your genomic information is available to you right now for a price. The question is, why would you want this information? How could it be useful? And how will this knowledge affect the shape of medical care going forward? Well, joining me this morning to discuss this new and challenging phenomenon is Dr. Robert West, Associate Professor in the Biochemistry and Molecular Biology Department at Upstate Medical University. Dr. West has a background in molecular biology, genetics, and genomics, and is currently teaching a course to medical students at Upstate Medical University entitled Personalized Medicine. And joining us as well is Dr. Nicholas Bennett, a fellow in pediatric infectious diseases at Upstate Medical University. Dr. Bennett also teaches medical students, and his emphasis is the importance of communication skills and patient-centered care. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So you are both very, very seriously engaged in shaping this next generation of doctors in your roles as instructors. What are you hoping to accomplish that will change the way that doctors view and treat patients? Dr. West.
I emphasize two different points in training medical students today. First of all, we have a core curriculum that of information that they have to learn. But the two points that I emphasize are genomic medicine and the power of social media in terms of improving patient care.
When you talk about genomic medicine, help us understand what that means.
So genomic medicine involves the genetics of the individual, the DNA, the 3 billion base pairs of DNA containing their genes, which encodes the proteins that runs the metabolism of the patient.
And so it's almost like their personal, what, architecture, their personal plan, biologic plan?
Their
personal fingerprint, would that be a kind of another analogy?
Yep, it's like
analogy?
A personal fingerprint. We all have fingerprints, and they look similar, but they're unique to each one of us, and they're encoded by genes. And so everything comes down basically to the DNA level, and now that the human genome has been sequenced and the price of sequencing a human genome is about $1,000 per person. It's going to revolutionize healthcare.
Okay, I want to talk more specifically, but you're trying to get this message across to these students so that they will what in their careers going forward?
So medical students historically have learned basic genetics, but genetics in the past, and this is the difference between genetics and genomics, genetics in the past has involved the study of Mendelian diseases, and these usually are rare inherited diseases, whereas today genomics gives us the power to study the evidence of DNA as it involves common diseases.
So it's the unique architecture of each person that will affect the way their healthcare may be delivered as they go forward.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, how about you, Nick? Dr. Bennett, what's your emphasis? I mean, what do you see as important in terms of your contact with medical students?
So my approach is the patient-centered care. I teach that weekly to the third-year med students rotating through the pediatric clerkship, as well as I've made some changes to the first-year curriculum at Upstate in the practice of medicine class. Patient-centered care is different from patient-led care. I think medical students get confused. Patient-led care is the idea that patients demand what they want and they get what they want. Well, as patient-centered care is more the practice of medicine taking into account the patient's fears and expectations and understanding. And that's where I think Dr. West and I cross over, because patients these days have a lot more information at their fingertips. When I was in medical school, it was unusual for a patient to show up with a printout from the web, and it was usually met with a lot of eye-rolling and exasperation. And nowadays, we are encouraging our patients to go to the web and get information, and there's lots of stuff out there, some of it good, some of it bad. And there's the genomics now. Patients are allowed to come in. We've actually had requests for genetic testing for specific diseases, even in the infectious disease arena. Not that it's necessarily relevant to what we do, but we've had those requests.
So it's becoming more popular in more commonplace in terms of what people understand is available.
Right. And so we, as physicians, have to adapt to that. The patriarchal idea of doctors managing the patient's care and the patients just kind of put up with it is long gone, I think. Patients aren't standing for that these days. And we know that patient-centered care has much better outcomes. We can look at patient satisfaction. We can look at diabetes management. We can look at high blood pressure management. We can look at cost. And every time you work more closely with the patient, taking into account what they know, what they don't know, what their fears are, and what they want out of their relationship, health outcomes are better. So we have to move towards that style of practicing medicine.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like you're in the title of your class, Dr. West, the personalized medicine. What you're approaching that. So, in just a minute or two before we take a break, tell me what does it mean to have to practice personalized medicine.
Personalized medicine believes that one size does not fit all. So if you think of Cinderella and her wicked stepsisters, only Cinderella's foot fit into the glass slipper, and that of the wicked stepsisters did not. And historically, it's been a one-size-fits-all approach to patient care, and we don't have to do that anymore because of genomics, in addition to the fact that patients are trained through social media. And as Dr. Bennett said, the patients, they don't want that, and it's time to move on to a different approach to medical treatment.
Well, do you expect, right now I know it's being used pretty commonly in the area of cancer, where people have interests and perhaps they may have a predisposition to having some kind of a cancer.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, you know what I'm going to ask you to do is hold that thought
okay.
Right now, because I want to come back and talk about that in just a minute. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. Please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guests, Dr. Bob West and Dr. Nicholas Bennett, and we're talking about personalized medicine and its impact on the future of healthcare. Well, we were talking right before the break, and I interrupted you when you started talking about where it's being used these days. Tell us more about how personalized medicine is being used now and how you think it may expand.
Well, certainly there's been a war on cancer for about 40 years, and so it's sort of leading the pack in personalized medicine. A lot of resources have been funneled in to the study of cancer at the genetic level. And cancer is a genetic or genomic disease involving lots of mutations and variations at the genetic level. And it was important to actually determine that, to study it in detail. And today that means sequencing cancer genomes. And an individual patient could have different cancer genomes, one for the initial cancer, one for the metastatic cancer, et cetera. And when they become sequenced, it's determined which particular protein pathways have been altered so that the oncologists know what treatments to target to those specific pathways.
So in that case, it absolutely and definitively can affect outcomes and affect care. If you get a genomic sequence, you can determine the best way to treat an ensuing cancer.
Yes, because classic cancer treatment has involved the one-size-fits-all chemotherapy, radiation treatment. That's not personalized. That's not targeted to the specific cancer that patient has.
It's like taking an anvil to kill a flea.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. So having the public taxpayer dollars, billions over the years, there's going to be a return on that investment. It's still a hard problem to solve. It will still take some time. but it definitely is a much better way of approaching cancer treatment than in the past.
How about, Dr. Bennett, you were talking about you have requests from patients on occasion that mm-hmm. for their predisposition to an infectious disease problem, and you said that's still equivocal as to whether that's helpful.
Right, but we do know for certain, I was going to actually add on to Dr. West's comments, there are certain, not just infections, but certain antibiotics that we need to know more about the patient on. So a few things I want to say. A good example is HIV. We know that there are mutations that render people resistant to infection or resistant to progression. And in fact, we now have to do analysis of the patient or of the virus to know whether certain medications are going to work, because we reach that point where we need to have that level of detail. Certain malaria medications are very toxic in people who have a particular blood disorder. So we always have to test for that blood disorder before we go on to these, to give them the medication. And these are very small examples, but I think, as Dr. West alluding to, we're getting into a bigger arena now.
So it sounds like this whole area has to expand. I mean, right. It's almost predetermined that it will expand.
I think so, and it's funny because as Dr. West talking, I'm reminded of the analogy with bacteria. We test bacteria for their drug sensitivities all the time, because you can't use one size fits all to treat every infection. Some bacteria are going to be resistant, and so the lab gives us a breakdown of which antibiotics work, and we pick the best one from the available list. So we've been personalizing antibiotic treatments for infections for years.
I also read somewhere that, and tell me if this is right, that most prescription drugs are effective in fewer than 60% of the people who take them. That same notion of it's kind of a broad brush and doesn't always impact. And so this idea of having a very delineated and definitive understanding of the individual's response to mm-hmm. a drug is going to be incredibly helpful.
And it's not just whether they're effective, it's whether they're you've got a problem. There are some people who are very sensitive to certain anesthetics, and you often don't know that until you give them the anesthetic, and then you get into trouble. Drug allergies, if we could know ahead of time who's going to be allergic to a penicillin-based drug or who's more likely to get an allergy, we can avoid those drugs.
So do you expect this whole personalized medicine, do you expect the cost to go down in terms of being able to achieve your own genome, request it, and be tested?
Well, I just wanted to comment based on what Dr. Bennett said. There's a term that describes this unique response to medications, and it's called pharmacogenomics. And once the genome is determined for an individual by DNA sequencing, then they can look at all of the various, for example, liver enzymes and the various, they're called polymorphisms or differences among us, where it encodes different enzymatic differences that involves metabolizing drugs differently from one another. And that's why the blockbuster drug model isn't going to work in the future, because the success rate in the past has been so poor. As most patients, certainly those my age, know, another example of one size does not fit all. So that's, again, where genomics comes in, response to drugs, and that's going to be a very important part going forward.
Let's get back to one question that concept that I'm not clear about. Tell me how social media plays a role in all of this, Dr. Bennett.
So social media is an interesting entity, and it's kind of a mixed bag. I guess what it alludes to, at least from my understanding, is the idea of using mostly elements on the web, media on the web, to interact with each other.
Like?
So best example I think most people recognize would be Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it sounds odd to say Facebook in the context of medicine,
right?
But people have been using Facebook to reach out to each other for medical advice. I'm sure people have posted pictures of rashes or stories and got input or empathy from friends. But also some providers are using this, too, to reach out to patients, either with a professional website to go out and people to follow up and get information on, or in some cases, actually, with the private messaging functions to communicate with each other.
So do you see this, when you're working with medical students, how do you see this unfolding going forward in this next generation of doctors?
Well, I think these are just tools in the same way as a book is a tool. So it's like asking when paper and pens came or paper and styluses came out, how would we use this? And the answer is you can use it for anything. I've made some use of the social networking site Twitter to get information out and also to get my own information. So a good example was a couple of weeks ago, I threw out some updated information on Rocky Mountain spotted fever because I was updating an article and I found it interesting. I threw it out. Within minutes, someone from Australia wrote back to me saying, have you heard about this latest review of Basidio bolomycosis, which is a disease I'd never heard of before? So I get educated and I get to then present that information to the infectious disease team here at Upstate.
So it just kind of reiterates this notion of a very tiny world, that basically we're really able to get out there, get the information out there, and patients and doctors will be able to both use that, those mechanisms to share information and gain information. But there could be some potential pitfalls. I want to talk about that a little bit in this notion of personalized medicine, because I started out by saying, would you want to know, for example, what do you see as potentially some of the considerations for somebody who is seeking personal genomic information? For example, who would help you make sense of a report like that? And would the results cause you to change the way you live? And another point might be, what happens if you find that you learn something about yourself for which there is no treatment or prevention at this point? Either of you.
So, I don't think there are easy answers to those questions because I think the answers need to be personalized. There you go. How's that? For myself, I don't have a burning urge to go out and find this information. So for me, it's a moot point. And I think maybe I'm avoiding my own questions.
Destiny.
by just going along and enjoying myself. For some people, they really do want to know. And I think it's important for people who do that to have the awareness that there are going to be implications, maybe some they don't realize. And there used to be this phrase, I'm hoping people are still doing it, it's genetic counseling. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, I've got a result, what does this mean for me? But some pre-testing counseling to say, you know, this is the kind of issues that might come up. Will it impact life insurance? Will it impact if you discover you have one of these real Mendelian inherited diseases, what is the impact on your kids?
Right.
Your kids now, your future kids, should they get tested? Would they want to know?
And there's a whole privacy issue too, it seems to me.
Privacy is a huge issue. I think Dr. Bennett knows a lot more about that than I do, but we are, as we speak, developing a social media policy for our medical school here. There is a fourth-year student, Aaron Stuppel, who's working on that to train budding docs here exactly what all of the various pitfalls are. And so his endeavor in this area is starting with identifying all of the various pitfalls that a potential medical student or doctor thereafter could get into in terms of interacting with social media.
Yeah, social media privacy issues, but also the genomics issue. It seems to me once that information is out there that you may have this predisposition to something, there's a question of will that information be protected? So I think it sounds to me like there are a lot of questions and a lot of concerns going forward, but also sounds to me like there's really almost no turning back. Do you agree?
Absolutely. We've never turned back the dial on technology and technological progress. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of ethical issues to iron out here. We're way behind on the ethical, legal, social aspects of dealing with genomics and social media.
Well, Dr. Robert West, Associate Professor in the Biochemistry and Molecular Biology Department at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Nicholas Bennett, a fellow in Pediatric Infectious Diseases at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much for joining us this morning with this very interesting and potentially challenging issue in medicine today. It's great to know that Upstate's on the forefront of training this newest generation of doctors in this way. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.